Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, it's been a while since we broke down and just did a program dedicated to tomatoes.
Well, they're one of the greatest things ever, so...
One of the greatest things ever.
They are. And this is... It's that time of the year. And they're everywhere.
Where do they rank on your top 10 list of the greatest things ever?
In the top 10.
Above or below sports cars?
Oh, below.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just wanted to get... a real understanding of your feelings about tomatoes. So,
what kind of wine do you drink with tomatoes? That's the weird thing, right?
It depends on the preparation. Mm-hmm. It depends on the preparation. As we go through the program, you know, we'll kick recipes back and forth, and we'll talk about how to work with tomatoes in the different situations. You always have to have a sitting room.
Because there's so many tomato situations.
There are tomato situations.
Yeah, there are, because all kinds of stuff happens to tomatoes.
We're about to have a tomato situation. This year is a year where they're going to be, but we had exactly the July, locally anyway, we had exactly the July that sets up a really nice season. Mm-hmm. The July is dry, relatively hot, not too many cool nights, not too many crazy thunderstorms. There were only one or two, like, isolated ones, right?
Right.
That's funny. It's almost like when there's a little bake in July, you start to have the tomato crop set properly. And then all August is usually your best harvest time.
Okay.
And this year we had exactly that July. So we have a shot at having a great crop. So it just depends on, do we have more crazy storms? Mm-hmm. You know, do we have some tropical storm drama that comes and floods out a bunch of people's fields and all that kind of stuff? But
all I know is... Well, I've talked about it before, but some animals eating my tomatoes, so I wouldn't know what kind of tomato season we're about to have, other than the fact that, thank goodness, we have many local farmers that provide us with beautiful local tomatoes.
You did verify what monster is eating your tomatoes,
I'm pretty
right?
sure it's a groundhog. I talked to one of the farmers the other day, and I don't know. Who knows?
So what does a groundhog do? He eats the entire tomato?
No,
does he make
he
sauce?
No, he takes one gigantic bite out of it and leaves the rest of it there. Either on the vine. It's either on the vine or on the ground.
Oh, I think it's a groundhog as a tomato taster.
There's some pretty heavy tomatoes. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. At least some of the sweet 100s are surviving. So I may
start. He's leaving the cherry tomatoes alone?
Yeah. I may just start to take some of the green ones off and use them as green tomatoes because I'm so frustrated. But next year.
So we're about to hit a big abundant season.
Mm-hmm.
So what...
You have to have a bunch of things lined up because you know some of them are going to be too ripe. Some of them are going to be underripe.
Exactly.
And some of them are going to be just right.
That's why you need to have different tomato situations, as
right.
I was mentioning.
Of course.
Okay, so for a tomato that we're talking about, let's take a time out and define heirloom variety of tomatoes. This is the thing that people always ask about, talk about. You know, a beefsteak tomato is not an heirloom variety of tomato. That's a very specific cross.
Mm-hmm.
But an heirloom variety of tomato, which are some of your favorite varieties by name?
I love German Stripies or German Striper. I love Purple Cherokees, Pink Brandywines, Kentucky Beefsteaks, Purple Crims, just to name a few. But there's so Early Girls are great, too.
I think that's a, pretty certain that's a cross.
Is it? Okay.
That's a cross.
All right. Those are my favorites.
Yeah, most.
The German Striper is absolutely my favorite.
Well, they can be the sweetest because
oh
that's a pretty low
that
acidity.
That is an amazing tomato.
That's
are
a relatively
sweet 100s an heirloom or are they?
No,
that's a regular tomato.
That's a cherry that's a cross.
Okay. All right. I love sweet 100s.
It does, just because a tomato is a cross and not an heirloom doesn't mean it's inferior quality necessarily.
Sure.
An heirloom means it's a variety that has, you know, what was an existing plant. It's not been monkeyed with, mm-hmm. you know, whether through normal, you know, mm-hmm. vegetation crossing, all that sort of agricultural technique business that people do. I mean, beefsteaks are great. They can be terrific tomatoes. They're great, big, red, juicy, have pretty good acidity, mm-hmm. ripen very consistently. The thing about some of the heirloom varieties is that they have very long, they'll have very long hang times in the vine, which makes them, it's almost like wine. It makes a more interesting flavor. And that they have very different profiles as far as their textures and their acidities, and you can use them in different ways. Those purple crims you're talking about, the darker tomatoes mm-hmm. like that usually have much higher acidity, and they yeah. do well, and they ripen for a long time, and they usually do well in a little bit place with a little bit cooler nights.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the tomatoes, like so I love some of the pink tomatoes, big pink watermelons, that kind of stuff. Mortgage lifters, the pinks that have like a little green
I love that
on the
name,
top.
Mortgage lifter.
Well, they always have awesome. They always have a story to them, you know.
Sure.
Mortgage lifter is a tomato from West Virginia in the 1930s, and you can understand exactly from that from that origin why it has that name.
Sure. Well, and also talking about, you know, different tomatoes at different times and different acidity levels. I was making gazpacho yesterday. And,
well, and you want different things for that, for sure.
And I made it, and it's an act of, it's a labor of love, excuse me. You know, it's just like, you know, you want to get every bit of juice. I do it by hand. So you want to get every bit of juice from the tomatoes on into your bowl. And I used purple Cherokees. We had some really big, ripe yellow tomatoes that were gorgeous. And pink Brandywines, and just to have the different levels of acidity and sweetness, and it was really, really, really wonderful, and produced so much juice. And every time you slice into one of those tomatoes, I can't wait to see what it looks like inside because they're so beautiful.
Well, and they're always a little bit different,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and the seed patterns run a little bit differently.
Sure,
but that's the point. I mean, the variety is the point. And that's why so often you'll see chefs put them on. The variety of different heirloom tomatoes on a plate together. Although sometimes, a lot of times people will do, and we'll talk about different recipes. Actually, why don't we take one moment? So let's talk about your gazpacho.
Your gazpacho is
excellent. You have a very particular sort of strategy in making it, I know. And when you do everything by hand, what do you mean? I assume you do everything
by hand.
Well,
the first thing is you need a very sharp knife, because if you're cutting through a ripe tomato, it's got to be sharp. And you don't want to bang up the tomato. You want to do a nice, beautiful, fine slice.
A lot of people use a serrated knife. Is that,
I mean, if that's what you want to use.
Is that cool by you?
That's not what I would use, but if they want to use that, that's fine. But I use a chef's knife, a very sharp chef's knife with a thin blade. And also you have acidity, so you want to be careful with keeping your knife wiped down well afterwards, cleaned and dry. Hand chop all the tomatoes, and I do use some of the small tomatoes as well, but I predominantly use large tomatoes and a variety. And as I'm mixing it, I add salt and pepper to the tomatoes as they sit in the bowl. And obviously the salt starts to draw out the juice from the tomatoes as well. So it sort of helps you to realize how much juice you're getting as you're chopping your tomatoes and what kind of where you are with making your soup. I add extra virgin olive oil at the same time while I'm cutting the tomatoes and going into the bowl. A little bit of fresh basil, a little bit of chive. And it just depends. The basil I'm using right now has a really strong flavor, so I'm putting very little in. And my chives are really strong too. And they have a very much of a garlic tone to them. So it's, you know, if I'm making a gallon of soup, I'm actually only putting about probably 2 tablespoons of basil and maybe a teaspoon of chives in, which is not very much at all.
So let's quantity that down, because I don't know how many listeners are making a gallon of gazpacho.
So let's say 4 cups of chopped tomatoes and juice. I would probably just do a pinch of chive and maybe a tablespoon of basil. And if it's delicate basil, you could certainly put more. And if the chives are delicate, you could put more chives.
That's the thing. If the herbs are fresh, they're going to have much more aroma, much more punch. The more they sit in your refrigerator or in some grocery store's refrigerator, the more desiccated they become.
The olive oil that I use, I have to be very careful with. We use a couple of different types of extra virgin olive oil from different places. And I use an Italian extra virgin olive oil that's pretty mild for my gazpacho. I don't want it to be too spicy. And actually, I do put a couple of drops of Tabasco in my gazpacho. So that's all the more reason why I don't want my olive oil to be too strong. So I've already said kosher salt and pepper. A tiny bit of Tabasco, the extra virgin olive oil, the fresh thyme. The fresh chives, the fresh basil, and you can put a tiny bit of thyme in. And I put just about a tablespoon of finely chopped shallots in. So everything's chopped by hand, and everything works together, and that's
it. You give it a stir and let it marinate. And
mm-hmm. although I try not to make it too far in advance. So we typically, it's one of the last things we prep for the day before service. So I would make it, you know, maybe an hour before you're about to serve it. One, that does give it a chance for the flavors to marry, but also, you know, the tomatoes don't break down too much. And obviously it does go immediately into a refrigerator because even though we don't like to refrigerate tomatoes, this is a chilled soup. So it needs to be refrigerated, obviously. And I garnish mine with really great creme fraiche with just a little bit of mild curry mixed in and butter poached lobster piece on top, which is actually cold. And I do season the lobster with extra virgin olive oil and a little bit of kosher salt and put that right on top of the soup.
So it's just the tomato, the herbs, the shallot, and the oil. That's what's flavoring the soup itself.
And I have at times put in a little bit of lime juice or lemon juice, but typically that's not necessary.
If you're using purple tomatoes, you probably don't need that.
Right. So it just depends on your tomatoes that you're using. But you might want a little bit of lime juice in particular because it does brighten it, and it is very pretty. But that's it.
So your gazpacho is a very particular tomato situation then.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because you have the acidity of the tomatoes, and it's cold, and you want different things for that. You're going to serve this in hot weather.
Right.
So you want something wine-wise that's refreshing. The lobster is an interesting variable because how much lobster is actually garnishing the soup? Is this something that you'd have a little bit of in every bite, or
no.
Is this something
no.
you would just have as sort of as a treat at some point?
Exactly. It's a treat. Right.
It's like the...
Because the whole thing—it's
like the marshmallows in your cereal, right? You just
keep
eating all the oat cereal to get and then save all the marshmallows that have been soaked in the milk, right? So you keep eating all the gazpacho, and then you save that bit of lobster with the oil and all that sort of business, and boom. So it's really absolutely about just the tomatoes, and if there's decent acidity and there's no real heat to it, it's
right.
just you're just getting it to a balanced place. It's not
exactly
meaning there's not spiciness to it.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a little spicy, some people make gazpacho a little bit spicy, or they'll use a lot of onion product, or they'll use peppers, or then that makes me want to drink rosé, pretty dry rosé with that. But it's with yours, it's a Southern Italian white that I want, something that seems fruity but finishes very clean. So sort of like I have a feeling it'll balance. I'm trying to have the same balance point as your soup. But something that will give some of the brightness that maybe that lobster does. And it can't be too thin, because you also have creme fraiche as a garnish on that, So which also has acidity.
Yeah.
So that takes me to grapes like Falanghina. Falanghina is a grape from Campania. There's a Falanghina from Sannio, so it's 100% of that grape, from producer Taberno, Cantina del Taberno. And this is just plump, bright. Not quite melony as far as it, but it has a little bit of that unctuousness, but there's a freshness to it as well. Not citrusy as far as the acid. A little bit firmer than that, like Pinot Blanc, like some Provençal rosés can be. It has some of the, maybe a tiny bit of tannin when it's a younger, like if it's a 14 or a 15, it would still have a little bit of a tannin to it, and that's not bad with the tomato.
So I forgot one of the ingredients, which is cucumbers. I always finish it with a Prigent, the tiny, tiny Prigent scoop or melon baller.
I wondered what
cucumber.
Happened to cucumbers. Yeah, I've eaten that soup a lot of times.
Yeah, I can't believe I forgot to say that, but yes. And it's fun because when you do the little
that gives
melon
you some
ball
texture.
Shape, yeah, and it's fun in your mouth, you know, to just have that little cucumber running around in there.
That must be really a treat to eat soup with you. Wow. Wow, very, very, very active vegetables, really fresh.
Right.
So that doesn't necessarily change what I would do wine-wise with it, but it does sound a little more interesting to have the texture there.
Right, right. And it's pretty, too, to have the pale green. I always peel the cucumber and then do
so you make the
smallest
soup, you stir
melon
it,
baller in the world.
You stare at it for a while. But I guess people should be able to make gazpacho in the summer, and this is going to be a good year for it.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
You can make it with varieties that are not heirloom varieties, which probably have more flavor in it if you're using heirloom variety tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. You could garnish it with shrimp, too.
I would be very tempted. I don't know why, but this summer I'm wanting tomatoes and cucumbers and feta.
Mm-hmm.
Feta cheese. I don't know exactly why.
Why not?
But it seemed like it was a side dish on the first time I was ever in Greece. Every single meal was outside. It was in the summertime. It was smoking hot.
That's nice.
And the side dish was a little salad of tomatoes and cucumbers and feta and fresh chopped mint and just oil.
Yum.
And yeah, it was nice. The little salty cheese was nice to have with that. Well, when we come back on Formidable Phone Food and Wine, we'll get into a few more tomato recipes and a few more tomato situations for wine to be applied to.
Look forward to
all of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, so we talked about gazpacho. Mm-hmm. And so let's get into a few more cold preparations for the magnificent tomatoes that are headed our way.
All right. One of the things I love to do, again, because the tomatoes are so beautiful, is to cut them in different shapes when I do a tomato salad. So some of them we slice, some of them we quarter, some of them we, you know, chop, whatever. So, and we use big ones and we use little ones, and, you know, you have all different, it's always, you know, our goal is to always have all different types of tomato on our heirloom tomato plate and to garnish with great oil. And then what else do you want on the plate with it? And right now we have peaches. So peaches on that plate are incredible. Or if you put melon on there, it's incredible. I particularly like watermelon.
Yeah, there are a couple of different ways that there is a particular salad. I think I made it for you one time a couple of years ago with yellow watermelon when it was really good. And they're very good this year. They're really perfumey.
Good. That's exciting.
Really perfumey. And big ruby red pink watermelon that are real sweet.
Good.
And a variety of heirloom tomatoes, including there's a green heirloom that it never changes color, but it still gets pretty sweet. That's an evergreen that is the name of the variety. And I love this in this salad. And all of those things with just mint and basil and oil, and lemon's important there. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I always put cucumbers in that guy. And the cucumbers, instead of the big ones, I always try to find little pickling cucumbers. Mm. They have a little bit thicker skin, mm-hmm. but slice them very, very, very thin.
They're cute, yeah.
Yeah, but they have a little bit, they have both the crunch and they have a little tiny bit of bitter from that skin, mm-hmm. you know, and they have more, a little more intense flavor because they're not like big watery cucumbers. And so they have a real punch, not just a crunch to it, but real punch.
I'm doing a crispy chicken liver salad, sort of a local farmer salad right now. I started it last night and I put pickled Vidalia onions on there, but I pickled them in red wine vinegar with pickling spice and sugar. So I made them very sweet and very tart.
So fried chicken livers.
Uh-huh.
Cornmeal fried chicken livers.
Yes. Marinated in buttermilk with cornmeal breading.
And red wine vinegar pickled Vidalias.
Yes. And I have red romaine in my garden. I have butter lettuce in my garden.
And now are there tomatoes involved in this?
Well, but I was thinking, now that we're talking
dish?
About the sexy chicken
this is
liver
the sexy
dish,
chicken liver dish.
that this I will is... add some of the, we have a host of little cherries, tomatoes. And so I was thinking I should definitely just roast some of those. I think that would be wonderful to add to that dish because we are talking about a lot of fresh preparation. And gosh, the roasted ones, you put a little bit of kosher salt on, good extra virgin olive oil, a little pepper, leave them in the oven overnight if you have a, well, I don't know if that, I guess that doesn't work at home.
Oh my goodness. You could make the roasted cherry, like a spicy roasted cherry tomato sauce.
Well, that's
for the crispy chicken livers.
Right.
You know,
as almost like a vinaigrette.
And you being you, you'd finish the sauce with a little bit of butter to round it out a little bit, right?
You make that sound like an accusation.
No, of course it is. Of course it is. The cardiologists
of course
America
it is.
Unite.
Oh, boy.
That with the chicken livers and your pickled Vidalias?
Yes.
And some of that
I'm gonna
crunchy
add that.
Lettuce, that
I'm
sounds
gonna
awfully good.
I'm going to add that good. Tonight. Oh, my gosh. And just picking lettuce out of your garden, it's like a miracle to me. This whole thing is so great. I mean, that lettuce is just delicious. It's amazing. So anyway, getting back to the tomatoes. And also, I was thinking, I make fried green tomatoes, and oh my gosh, this is the time to do that too. Again, there are just so many different things you can do at the different stages with your tomatoes. You know, going to the point which we will get to, which is when they're so ripe, you either, you know, you're canning them, making sauce, or doing something like that with them. So they're just so versatile food product.
Do not buy the most expensive, fanciest tomatoes that are perfect and not overripe for your sauce.
Right.
You're honestly better off buying the slightly imperfect, overripe guys to make your sauce for the most part.
You have to watch them. Yes, I totally agree. But
you just have to watch how
overripe they are, because I was cutting into one when I was making gazpacho yesterday. I was cutting into one, and I smell each one before I put it in, and they can go a little bit too far, and they get a little funky. So do watch too ripe as well.
Yeah, no question. You want to still smell when you're picking out heirlooms. Or really any tomatoes, do you smell the sun on the vine? That's always the that's always the question. If you don't smell the sun on the vine when you smell that tomato, it's not okay.
Right.
Because tomatoes don't have that much aroma, but the vine has tremendous aroma. That really tells you about how fresh it is.
The vines do smell really good, and now I know what that smells like too.
Yeah,
interesting.
I mean, that's one of those things that, funny, my great-grandmother taught me, and it just sticks with me. She just would not buy a tomato unless it smelled right. She didn't care at all what it looked like, you know, and for sauce, you want flavor, you want freshness. I mean, we'll get into sauce because we're still talking about cold things. So a salad with peaches and tomatoes, you had mentioned.
So good. Such a good, wonderful, and that's another chance for...
Do you use like a salty or a sharp element or something with that?
Well, one of the things I do is put in a little bit of extra salt around the edge of the plate and a little pepper around the edge of the plate, because it just helps to balance everything out. But, you know, once you introduce the peaches, you can or cannot add cheese. So, I mean, a little goat cheese on there would be wonderful, one of your favorite goat cheeses, or as you said, your feta cheese. Or even adding a little bit of buttery breadcrumb, that would be wonderful. Let's say you have some brioche that's a couple of days old and you want to make... buttery breadcrumbs from that.
Hey, honey, do you have some brioche that's a couple of days old?
You're trying to say. Or some baguette or whatever that you have that's old. Make a little bit of, not too, you don't want the crumb to be too hard. That's what I'm looking for. And that's why brioche comes to mind, because when you toast that in a little bit of butter, it's very, very tender, which is nice on the salad.
You do an excellent job of building very balanced decadence on decadence, even in fresh items. Always makes me want like little fresh, like goat's milk ricotta, maybe oil cured olives.
Definitely olives. As you just said that word, I was thinking,
but like the really punchy,
some Nyon olives.
Yeah,
Nyon
would be nice. Or just the Sicilian oil cured guys that are like a giant punctuation mark when you eat them. So that every time that you had a bite of tomato and peach after the olive, it would be like the sweetest, you know, really most complex thing that you have ever had.
And that's the time to lay in fresh whole leaves of basil. You don't have to chop the basil. Just pull tender pieces
that's a dish that's a lot like
stem.
A very loud conversation.
Exactly.
This is not a...
Roughly chopped parsley.
This is not a delicate...
Or maybe if you prefer cilantro, put a little bit of cilantro leaves on there. But, I mean, you can just basically unload the garden on your tomatoes. I mean, really, truly, in a way, you know? Because they're just so compatible with so many different things. I mean, I have baby beets. I have young beets coming up, and they're candy stripe beets. Oh, my gosh. I roasted some of those yesterday. Those things are sweet as everything. And that would be nice on the salad, too, just little baby whole beets on there roasted.
It's funny. It makes me think for us immediately of, can you do a vegetarian main course that's about the beets? You said unload the garden on the tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Can you do some kind of fantastic sauté with the beets and one or two other elements and have the tomatoes become that sauce? Or would those beets maybe be a nice garnish for gazpacho if you were a vegetarian?
Right. Right. Well, why not? And the other thing I think that's fascinating to me about actually growing food is I get to pick them when I want to. In other words, I can pick them at the size that I want to, too. For example, those beets, I have golden and red ones, and I have red carrots coming up. And I mean, I ate one of those right out of the ground the other day, and my gosh, are those sweet, but they have a very different flavor. And I'm not going to let those get very big. And that would be a great garnish for a vegetarian plate with the beets and tomatoes and, you know, fresh herbs and great oil. And, you know, I probably wouldn't put the olives on there, but I sure as heck would put some goat cheese on there if you eat goat cheese as a vegetarian.
So I guess we should start talk about cooking tomatoes. It's funny, people have feelings about they don't eat fresh tomatoes, they don't eat cooked tomatoes. When tomatoes are good, I eat them.
Sure.
So now you're not so much the tomato sauce maker. That's more my bag.
Yeah.
Well, where do you use tomatoes in hot dishes?
Well, one thing I do.
Or tomatoes that are hot.
One thing I love to do, and I've been doing this for a very long time, is making a grilled tomato vinaigrette. And if you have a wood grill, oh my goodness, that can be amazing. I, of course, have a gas-fired grill at the restaurant. And so we char them, and I almost never char anything on a grill. But in this case,
it just makes me smile when you say things like char, because
you know that's
not, I like fire more than
well,
you.
Sure, and it's not the way I typically cook. I usually cook very delicately. So I char them on the a little bit of kosher salt, again, a pepper, and a little bit of neutral oil to grill, but you want very little oil on there. It's more important to have a clean grill and a well-oiled grill than it is to have it on the tomato. And then just sort of char it on all, as many sides as you can, if you will.
So it can't be too crazy ripe because it's going to blow up on
no,
the grill.
No, it cannot be crazy ripe, but it should be a good tomato. And then I usually do, say, for vinaigrette for four people, I would probably do two good-sized tomatoes. And once they come off, let them cool down a little bit and then blend them with extra virgin olive oil, fresh lime juice, salt and pepper, and that's it. It's very, very simple. And if you feel your extra virgin olive oil might be a little bit strong, you can always cut it with a little bit of corn oil or canola oil or grapeseed oil, something that's neutral, and just maybe 50-50 extra virgin and another oil. But then I pass it through a strainer, a fine sieve, and it's just a beautiful vinaigrette.
And the strainer takes care of the any charred
seeds
pieces
and
seeds.
Yeah,
right.
And you can pull the, I mean, the skin will pull right off after you've charred it. So if you don't want that color in your vinaigrette, you can just remove it. But that's a great vinaigrette for a nice piece of fish, especially if you're grilling a piece of fish, rockfish, grouper, snapper, anything, swordfish would be great. And then I would definitely put some olives on the plate if it was with swordfish, probably some baby arugula, a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, and, you know, nice salt and pepper, and just have a really fresh, beautiful. And you could always kind of duplicate it in a way by putting slices of fresh tomato on the plate as well. Maybe it's a different type of tomato than you used in your vinaigrette, which gives you different flavor profiles. And I mean, it's just a wonderful way to utilize. And I also do a salad with the grilled tomato vinaigrette, just lots of greens and whatever you have around. But I like it with the fish a lot.
It's funny, it makes me want a salad with a green tomato, fried green tomato garnish with a grilled tomato vinaigrette.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just that's, you know, tomato on the brain right now, right?
Right, and fried green tomatoes are easy. Just slice them so they're thick enough, not too thick. I can't tell you how thick. I don't know in dimension, but
about 3/8 of an inch.
Okay, Tony knows. And cornmeal, cayenne pepper, and you do not salt them until they come out of the fryer or out of a saute pan that has oil in it. And that's it. You know, it's just very light and simple, and it's just enough to make a wonderful crispy texture, and you can enjoy those green tomatoes nice and hot.
I'll admit to really liking that as a garnish for all, because of the crunch.
So many things.
Because of the crunch and liking the cornmeal for an awful lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's meat off the grill with a slice or two of that and some kind of a tomato relish. Fantastic.
And I typically fry them in peanut oil, so unless you're allergic to it, I think that's really one of the best oils to fry green tomatoes in.
Well, it holds consistent temperature, period.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so nice to fry.
Exactly. So tomato sauce from you.
Tomato sauce from me. The most important thing is to get great tomatoes. And the thing that you really want is really fleshy tomatoes. So I would not use heirlooms for, if it's sauce, like you're putting up sauce,
mm-hmm.
or you're heading in the direction of sauce for pasta, There's usually two that I will make. One is a fresh tomato sauce that's very clean, and it's either San Marzano's or linguiças or Roma's, something that's a dense tomato.
Sure.
You know, when you pick up a box of these guys, it weighs a lot more than...
Right.
It's kind of funny. It just weighs more. And those are all things that they have. They're relatively thick-skinned tomatoes, so you have to make a decision about how you're going to get rid of skins, because you don't want skins in the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making, you think about basically tomato concassé, the French title for tomatoes without the seeds and without the skins.
Mm-hmm.
I think I introduced to you a long time ago, fry those skins.
Oh, yeah.
That's the best snack. And that is a great snack.
You're
talking
snack.
About swordfish with the olives and
yeah.
and a tomato vinaigrette. That is a great garnish. It is a good garnish.
Because
you just give the skin.
Cooked off in corn oil, a little salt afterwards.
Yeah, you can put a little dusting of flour on them if you want to, just mm-hmm. like the tiniest.
Mm-hmm.
Like put a little bit of flour in a bowl and a whole lot of tomato skins. Toss around a little bit, put them in the fryer, salt them well when they come out. And they're unbelievably like candy.
That
is a remarkable thing. And also with a spicy dish, that they're remarkably fun.
So you were talking about tomato concassé.
But you make that, and then you just decide how you're going to season it. Please do not put a mountain of sugar in there.
No.
A lot of people will do that in tomato sauces.
Okay.
And cook it for a little while before you actually salt them. And when you cook them, for me, I cook it very gently in a very, very large pot. And I will just, the tomatoes go in. And then I'll add a little bit of, I'll usually add for a big pot, like a 10-quart pot, like half a jalapeno, a little bit of fresh honey, maybe a tablespoon and a half, something like that.
Okay.
A little bit of, and just gradually add a little more salt.
So no garlic or onions or?
If you want to do, if I decide I want to use garlic, if I have really good fresh garlic, like this year garlic came late.
Okay.
And there's really good fresh garlic. I will season the pan that tomatoes are going to go in with
okay.
by sweating garlic in that pan really
mm-hmm.
well. But almost never use onion or anything like that. What I want is something neutral. I'm thinking mostly about putting up the sauce. When I make the pasta, I'll sweat a fresh onion.
Okay.
And, I'll sweat a little more. I want to have a neutral, well-balanced tomato product, basically. That has that essence of the tomatoes and the sun from the season,
mm-hmm.
So I'll taste it and try to sort out exactly how does it need a little sweetness, need a tiny little bit of heat, and does it need a little bit of the garlic?
So you basically have a neutral tomato sauce, and then
you do whatever you want to it later
because
you use it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
We come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food and Wine. We'll talk about tomato sauces and different applications with that, and also maybe in a wine application with tomato sauces.
Ooh.
All of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we were just diving into tomato sauce.
Yes.
Not literally.
Well, no, thankfully.
So, when you use tomato sauce, when you make tomato sauce for something,
mm-hmm.
what most usually are you using tomato in? Is it large majority of the way that you work and think, I know, is French?
That's exactly how I make a tomato sauce like a French person would. I just pretty well saute onion and a little bit of garlic and shallot in butter. And I typically add a little bit of red wine, salt and pepper and tomato and let it work and puree it, strain it and finish it with butter and quite a bit of butter, frankly. What would be more typical and I'm sure would be to have extra virgin olive oil or some sort of olive oil in it and certainly to have herbs in it.
But you use it as a sauce for
an item
or as part of another sauce, right?
No, I use that as a sauce. One of my favorite things to use that with is roasted butternut squash, the pairing of butternut squash with a little bit of garlic and butter in it with the tomato sauce is really, really great.
Butternut squash?
Spaghetti squash.
I've seen you do spaghetti squash with
spaghetti
it.
Spaghetti squash as well. Right.
Yeah.
So.
That's funny because it's a very deceptive least spaghetti looking.
It is. So it's kind of funny to, well, that's true, with the spaghetti
with the
squash,
sauce.
It does look like, right. But with, you know, with tomato sauce, I just, I don't make it. I really don't. That's one of the few times I actually make a tomato sauce.
That's funny. Yeah, because all through like June and then July, I'm like trying to figure out and trying to figure out how many jars we, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many places, you know, do we, I mean, the chef's putting up tomato sauce that we spend way too much time talking about over, you know.
Sure.
What is a good year for the sauce with the cherry tomatoes? You know, is it this year is a good year for sauce with cherry tomatoes. And so doing a roasted or almost like melted cherry tomato sauce is a fun one to put up. And that and not a bad one to do for like a, you know, Sunday family pasta drama. That's one where, like you're asking about when I put up the neutral sauce, that's different from putting up the cherry, because that's an a la minute thing. So that you are going to use onion and garlic to really flavor the pan, you know, and leave it in there, but you don't want any color on any of that.
Sure.
And then you start adding your cherries that you split and salted and got some of the juice out of, so that, and you really don't want, for me, I never want to cook it that much. I want to get it warm and I want to concentrate and focus the flavor and the sweetness of it, but I don't want to get it hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sauce for me with the cherries is always one. And I don't care about the skins and the seeds in that. I'm perfectly happy with that. Fresh oregano and the flowers and the oregano is fantastic to have in there.
That's nice.
I don't always love to end up with the oregano leaves, like, you know, in your mouth. But if you go from the beginning of the sauce with a lot of fresh oregano on the stem with the flowers that you sort of like just crush up in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you're going to take dried spaghetti and crush it up into little pieces, take the oregano and do some of that. Over that, it'll still hang on to the stem, especially if it's really fresh. So you're not going to lose that much of it into the sauce, but you can get a lot of the perfume.
Mm-hmm.
And the flowers have a very different flavor from the leaves, and so that's kind of a fun thing to.
I'm almost surprised you don't use marjoram as much as you like marjoram.
I do love marjoram, but it's been difficult to get. And you know I can't grow it. I live in the forest. So.
Well, and I grew some, and I've already killed it, so. I don't know what happened to the marjoram, but the plant's completely dead.
None of our farmers are having success with it right now.
Okay. Well,
now.
And I know you like the buds from that plant, but.
Oh, the buds from marjoram you can make your own capers with.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, you're talking about the neutral sauce, made with San Marzanos or linguiças or romas. Now that you can take in a million different directions. If you wanted to make people think about, you know, red sauce, marinara sauce, you can take it in that direction, but you can also do a gentler version for seafood with pasta. You know, you can use that neutral sauce to finish, you know, spaghetti cooked with fresh garlic and white wine and clams.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great natural one. And then you're coming into, like, the end of the tomato season is going to be the beginning of clam season in the Bay.
That's perfect.
So that's a nice piece of timing. And you get a little bit more acidity at the end of the season with the cooler nights, you know, when you start running into September. Although we've had one or two Indian summers where we had really the best tomatoes of the year, maybe the first week of October, which is
really exciting.
I don't expect that this year, but it's probably twice in the last decade we've had that.
That would be cool.
And you've had some unusual things growing together.
One of the other things I do differently than you would with tomato sauce is that I do put a piece of bacon in there. You know, just basically fat back.
I think this is the latest in any program you've ever mentioned pork. over a series of years.
Uh-huh.
Just for the records.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
so fat back and tomato sauce.
Yes. Very good.
People,
it makes it very different. So.
And the Italians will put guanciale, you know, as part of the base.
Okay.
Again, get it crispy in the pan and use some of that fat to cook the onion and and get the tomatoes going.
Okay, well, so I guess I am making an Italian tomato sauce. Here, I thought it was French and Southern.
Well, good cooking is good cooking.
Exactly.
No cultural borders there.
Right.
So
I think it's time for a chef's challenge.
Oh.
Yeah, here you go, Tony.
Read it.
Read it and weep. All right, so in this situation,
an old favorite.
Yeah, so we're giving you a situation. You're cooking over next door at your neighbor's house. So you're not cooking at home, and you're cooking for 12 people.
Oh, you give me stuff that I like. Green zebra tomatoes, pink brandy wines, purple crims. So pink brandy wines are nice and sweet. The purple crims have a punchy flavor and good acidity, and the green zebras are almost crunchy. They're kind of they're fun tomato. fresh garlic, all kinds of extra virgin olive oil, basil, lavender, thyme, cilantro, lemon, lime, salt cod, sardines, wild king salmon, butter lettuce, a whole rabbit. What am I going to do, a rabbit hors d'oeuvre for 12 people? I mean, how big is this rabbit?
It's a big meal.
I guess so. The am I going to be in their kitchen the day before to confit that rabbit?
No.
Because that's all I can think of, to feed 12 people with that rabbit.
Absolutely not. No, no, no. You have to walk over there and cook dinner.
Okay. Then you got to break it down and you got to break it down into parts.
Okay.
And make rabbit pinchos, I guess. You got poblano peppers. So rabbit and poblano pepper and
onion
pincho.
We needed something for
pincho.
Hors d'oeuvre. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you need something to slow them down. But you could give them that. You could also do the sardines with and grill those guys too.
I love sardines.
Yeah, both rabbit marinated that a little bit. Hopefully they're hiding good vinegar in their cabinet. You know, a little cider vinegar or something for the rabbit. But let's get those guys on the grill. Use some of the cilantro to make a salsa verde, but there's like a Mallorcan salsa verde that's with cumin seed, roasted cumin seed, and a little bit of garlic and a lot of fresh cilantro. That'd be nice for the rabbit with the poblanos.
Do you have cumin seed on your list?
I sure don't. Uh-uh. But maybe they have it in their cabinet.
Doubt it.
Hey, Mary Beth, do you have? Anyway, let's see. I want to use the salt cod. I don't have pasta on here. I always want bacalao. Bacalao, I guess I could just fry it. I mean, that's really and truly the... Fry it, and I will admit to, I like cornmeal on fried things so much. You know, you dust it in flour, but then you give it a little bit of cornmeal too.
Mm-hmm.
And pan fry the bacalao and the green zebra tomatoes. Make a little quick relish with that and some of the oil and a little bit of garlic and lemon for that salt cod. That's a nice first course. With the, you know, use some of the butter lettuce as a bed for that, and that works out. I could also use that falanghine I was talking about. Go back to the grill with the Wild King salmon. I guess it's got to be a whole salmon because it's 12 people. So
it is.
So I'm going to use the pink brandy wines and the crims. And I'm going to grill slices of that, but just very slightly, nice thick slices. And plate those. Use some of the shallots to make almost like a shallot and a little bit of citrus dressing with some of the fresh basil. And lay the slices of grilled king salmon on those tomatoes. They've been very lightly grilled, just literally to kind of take the chill off of them. And some of that shallot relish with the basil as a garnish. And that's kind of, I think that's
okie doke.
Everything that's it. The lavender, I'll leave a bouquet of the lavender for another time.
Put it behind your ear.
Something. That's what I was thinking. That's exactly what I was thinking. It's a lovely scent.
Mm-hmm.
And here you go. Your situation, you can read it on the bottom.
Oh, okay. My situation is only a grill and hardwood. That's fun.
Yeah.
Lamb shoulder, garlic, fresh garlic, carrot.
Oh, and you got to do all your preparation on a door over a two sawhorse.
I can do that. No problem. Lamb shoulder, fish garlic. That would be fresh garlic.
It's not fish garlic. There are many varieties of garlic. There's even
Tony's,
black garlic. There's
Tony's
no fish garlic.
Handwriting. Carrots, lemons, parsley, thyme, yellow watermelon, eggplants, cherry tomato. What does that say next to the cherry tomato? Manchego cheese.
It says browns because...
Yeah, what does that mean?
Because every year there's some variety of cherry tomatoes that are the best ones. And, mm-hmm. and a bunch of the farmers call this variety that sort of looks a little brown-green on the top.
Oh, okay.
Brown boys.
Oh, yeah. I love those.
And
okay.
They're really good this year.
All right. Manchego cheese, extra virgin olive oil. No dairy and no garden.
Oh,
Tony.
Oh.
Oh, that's excellent. All right. So I'm building my fire, obviously, with my hardwood on my grill because I need to get that lamb shoulder going immediately. And it needs to cook slowly on low fire because that's going to take a long time and it needs to be tender. And I would have marinated it with a little bit inside the... I would cut a couple of pockets in and put some garlic and thyme in.
Yeah, you can just kind of pull the bones and the...
Yeah, and so to marinate it.
Connect the tissue apart.
Okay, so the things I need to cook are eggplants and maybe the carrots, but I can do fresh carrots. So,
and carrots with a grill.
Yeah, no. So eggplants, I'm going to cut them in half, rub them with the extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of the garlic as well, and salt and pepper, and I'm going to grill them. and I'm going to grill them slowly near the end of the cooking process on the lamb shoulder. And the carrots are going to be peeled and cut on a dramatic bias, so they're long, thin pieces. And I'm going to toss that with the large dice of the yellow watermelon, a little bit of parsley, and a little bit more of the extra virgin olive oil, and the lemon. And
so it's carrot watermelon salad?
You betcha. And the cherry tomatoes. And that is actually going to be the accompaniment for the lamb shoulder. Parsley.
You're a wild woman.
I am. I am in so many ways. The parsley finely chopped with a little bit more extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper just to give some freshness to the lamb shoulder. And those are all the ingredients that you gave me.
Yeah, it's not but so
That's
much.
Not just too one many no. things. And there you go.
You mean you cut me off in the cumin seed on the
that's right
on I'm my salsa. I'm not giving you anything
keep
extra.
Keep you true to your list.
No,
that's especially since you denied me dairy and the garden.
Denied dairy.
Yeah, so I would let that beautiful lamb shoulder rest for a while and slice it nice and thin and then just accompany it on a big platter. You know, just lay it out on a big platter with that beautiful salad on top and the Manchego cheese would be a cheese course afterwards. That's it.
You're not going to grill it?
No.
it's funny. I was thinking about the situation. It's like, what in the world would I do with that lamb shoulder? You know, because they can be like tough and it's hard to, they have to pull it apart.
Yeah, you have to
slice it and all that. That's like what a
lamb shoulder. How can
you? Because you want to braise it or you want to confit it or like you're looking for a slow cooking method, and I was thinking, well, I guess. You could just build a fire and
let it go low and slow for a long time.
You could also just bury that lamb shoulder in the embers.
Sure.
But I don't know how long. I don't know who makes that calculation per
I've never cooked
kilo
that way,
of lamb shoulder. Yeah,
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
But that's just in thinking about the challenge, I was like, I have to experiment with that. That would be super interesting.
Well, that was fun to do that chef's challenge. So, Tony, with the fish with the grilled tomato vinaigrette, what do you think we should drink with that? And let's just say it's rockfish, since that's available locally, grilled wild rockfish.
I mean, a rosé with punch to it, a Bandol rosé, would be pretty darn nice treat. There's a rosé coming out of Washington State that has the real body to it, and it's pretty darn good purchase from a producer called Airfield.
Airfield?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, literally, the vineyards are all planted on what were like World War II airstrips in
wow.
Washington State.
That's interesting.
But their rosé is quite good and a good purchase. But I think for the rockfish, something like that would be first on my list. You could drink a white Chateauneuf du Pape with it. You could drink some Northern Rhone whites, Saint Péray maybe. But I think I'd rather honestly have the fleshy rosé. Well, I think that's all we have time for on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
If you want to download this program or any of our other podcasts, please go to the WYPR webpage, wypr.org. Look up the Foreman & Wolf page, and you can see all the broadcasts there. If you'd like to reach Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf, and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
And if you have comments, questions, or anything you'd like to share, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. Thanks for listening.
Have a great Sunday.